from the Carter Subaru Studios, this is the G and Ursula Show with G. Scott and Ursula Voitin.
Good morning. Happy Wednesday. And thank you for listening to the G and Ursula Show. Oh, it is the first day of fall. Good morning, Ursula.
Good morning, G. It feels like it's the first day of school for you and you're ready to show off your brand new school clothes.
Well, you know, I'm in here.
Ursula,
I'm in here.
I can smell the coffee from here.
I know.
That's what's going on.
Wait a minute.
She is in studio.
Heather Bosch.
Yes, sir.
You can't bust me out.
I'm not busting you out. I like coffee, too.
Can you tell I've had a lot of cups?
Yeah, just a little bit. No, it's great to see you guys here.
Good morning, Ursula. Why are you looking all fall festive and stuff? Is there a reason?
Of course, because it is officially going to be fall just a little after noon today.
Okay.
I'm ready to welcome the new season.
Yesterday, I know I wasn't here, but you don't disappoint me. You guys did play Earth, Wind, and Fire yesterday, right?
Yes, because Rob Kearney, one of our very favorite listeners who now lives in Tennessee, he still listens. Officer Rob,
yeah.
He still listens from Tennessee.
All right. I just want to make sure.
Yes.
Did you sing along?
No, but we should do it again today.
Okay.
Right, Andrew?
All right.
I know Andrew won't let us down. We'll
Andrew's
do it again
today. Andrew's like, no, don't involve me. All right, let's get to it. Ursula's Top 5 News Stories of the Day, brought to you by Economy Fence Center.
About 2,000 students in Snohomish County are quarantining this morning because they were in contact with someone who had COVID.
Despite that large number, 2,000 students in quarantine, the silver lining of that is that there are just under 200,000 K-12 students in Snohomish County. So this is roughly 1-2% of those students out due to COVID quarantines.
And County Health Officer Dr. Chris Bitter says there could be reason at some point to shut down a classroom or two in a school temporarily if they can't control an outbreak. But he says at this point there's no need to change school-wide, district-wide, or county-wide operations. And we checked around. School districts across Pierce County have also reported hundreds of COVID cases in the first couple of weeks of school. The Seattle School District has seen more than 160. Auburn has reported nearly 100. Is this what you expected for the school year?
Yes. This is. I expected this, and this is the new world of COVID that we are entering. Now, this is good because the good news in this report, you didn't report any of these kids sick. You didn't report any of these kids in the hospital. Nobody is symptomatic. So let's celebrate that good news. Okay. Now, let me give a little bit of bad news as we enter into this, if you will, new world of COVID that we're in, because it's not really going away. The bad news is this, is for those parents out there, Ursula, those parents out there, single moms, single dads, right? Low paying jobs, right? Cases where you don't have vacation or anything. If you don't work, you don't get paid. Here's the world. Son or daughter is at school, has a runny nose. Sir, ma'am, you have to come and pick up your daughter. Even if the child does not have COVID. You still have to come pick your child up because they are showing symptoms. You go get your child, and oh, by the way, you cannot bring that child back until you have that doctor's note. What I'm saying is what happens is so I'll go back to my days of when if I didn't work, I didn't get paid. Well, I'm going to try to do the best that I can to work. So it's really a real tough stage that we are entering in. And it makes me nervous. It makes me nervous. This is another example of people who don't have high paying jobs, people who don't have careers. They are really going to have a very hard time, which could possibly lead to a topic that we are consistently talking about. And there's going to be a theme today. Another thing, Ursula, that can lead to homelessness. Right. These types of things, these actions right here will start to little by little lead to homelessness.
So you said it really well. I think right now this is what I think many expected. So when you first hear the number 2000, like, ugh.
Yeah.
But again, they're taking as many precautions as possible. The goal is to keep the students in the classroom and as you said, this is sustainable for families with older kids or those who can afford to pay for childcare, but it is going to be a lot more difficult if you are not in that category. So North Shore is doing something different. Mm-hmm. Starting on Monday, K through 12 students in the North Shore School District will start getting tested weekly for COVID. This batch testing program is going to be done whether the students are showing any symptoms or not. The district says everyone in a classroom will put their test samples together in a batch vial, no names or personal ID. And it's similar to what they actually did last spring. And the North Shore School District also keeps a COVID dashboard that is updated daily. And since August 1, they say there have been 76 confirmed positive student cases and 17 amongst their staff.
I love this. I love this idea. Now, Chef, I know you're busy, man. How are we paying for it? How are we paying for it? Because usually I say I love it, and then the text is, because I'm used to the text line. The text line is going to say, gee, you always want to give money away. You always want to give money away. How are we paying for it? So I'm going to check in with the expert. Chef, how are we paying for it?
Well, there are some federal dollars available to school districts. I'm not sure exactly what North Shore is doing, but my understanding is that with pool testing, you dramatically reduce the cost because instead of performing one test for every single kid and paying for each of those tests, you group all the results together. You basically just do one test so you can get an exponentially lower cost for the number of people who are being tested.
But if you look at that cost and you apply it to, compare that to not having kids in school, that is an investment I think that many districts, including the North Shore School District, think it is worth the money. The other thing that some people might have issue with is testing. That often? Okay, the testing isn't always, you know, the greatest experience. So do you want to do that? I say kudos to North Shore for coming up with this way to keep the students in the classroom with the least amount of disruption. But again, you have to be okay with regular testing.
North Shore. North Shore School District.
Uh-huh.
I've done some events in North Shore. Is that
that's
up in
like
that
Bothell?
That's in that Bothell area.
Yeah. What about it?
That's a good school district.
It's a great school district.
You see what I'm saying? My point. Is every school district able to do that?
No. No, because testing doesn't come cheap. And we'll talk about that in a second. But if anyone's saying, well, that frequent testing, isn't that going to then end up with more kids being in quarantine? And the former FDA commissioner, Scott Gottlieb, says, actually, frequent testing will mean less quarantining.
The criticism I get when I advocate testing in the schools is that it's just going to lead to mass quarantines, unnecessary quarantines. It's actually the exact opposite.
Yeah.
States like North Dakota, Utah are using testing to keep kids in the class. They have what's called, you can Google it, test to stay. So they have these protocols in place where when they have a positive case, rather than quarantining the whole class, what they do is they test everyone in the class on a regular basis and they keep the kids in the classroom. My kids are actually home this week because there was a case in the class and now they're in quarantine. But what they could have done is kept the kids in school and just tested them serially every day to make sure that that index case didn't lead to some downstream infections. That's test to stay. That's what Utah is doing successfully. North Dakota, other states are doing it as well.
And I did check. Families do have the option to opt out of this batch testing, but they would still, their students would still be required to quarantine if someone in the classroom has a positive test result.
I love it.
Yeah, I do too. If you can afford it. Now we did look into there are some stats out, and you sent me this information about how much testing is different in terms of cost per state. And as it turns out,
Washington is one of the top leading when it comes to they cost the most money for tests here.
Okay. And it was basically on average, outpatient care testing costs about $168, independent labs a little over $140, and a doctor's visit $121. But it's more in the state of Washington. Chef, what was the amount that we were talking about? Can you look on that map? But in any case, the prices are a lot higher. So you know who's making a lot of money? These labs that do these tests, because the prices are a lot higher than the Medicare reimbursement rate of $51 and $42 for antibody testing. So just keep in mind that all those tests, again, they don't come cheap. And in the state of Washington, we have one of the most expensive.
You know, I have a feeling, Ursula, that I'm going to be possibly doing radio with you until I'm 80. Because there's going to be no more Social Security. There's going to be no, all we're doing is kicking the can down the road. You know what I mean? Because the money right now is being used. And I'm going to go ahead, and this time, for all the people that say, gee, where does this money come from? I'm going to jump in the pool with them. I agree with y'all. Where is all this money coming from? You know where it's coming from? It's coming from, gee, Ursula, y'all working until you're 80.
Yes.
It's about $150 on average per test.
There we go. So we are among the higher ones.
Yes.
Okay, in Redmond, there are about 24 Redmond firefighters who are pushing back on the vaccine mandate, and they are accusing that city of reneging on a deal that they made, they say, to continue working after October 18th.
The city of Redmond has the ability to honor their negotiated agreement and allow us to continue to serve the citizens of Redmond, just as we have since this all started. Will they?
Brian Robillard claims that the city agreed to allow them to get an exemption if they would get tested regularly before going to work. And his wife tells Cairo 7 TV it is devastating to think that her husband could lose his job.
It's sad. That's his life. It's been his life. It's been our life. And I take pride in saying that my husband is a firefighter.
Yeah, and there's people that have lost family members due to COVID. This is a very ugly time. This pandemic is a very serious thing. So the question is this. Are we going to try to get on the other side of this? Do we want COVID to eventually go away? Because at this present time, at this current present time, the best protection that we have against COVID are three things. The vaccine, social distancing, and wearing a mask. We don't have any other defense. We have just recently seen a variant come across and make it more transmissible and make it even stronger. Is there a possibility that we want this thing to mutate and get stronger? No, because if that does happen, it'll be too late. And so I'll answer by saying this, Ursula. I don't want to be rude and say, well, I don't know what to tell you. But the truth is, I don't know what to tell you. And there are going to be people that will decide to change careers the same way that there are people that had to change careers because of this pandemic, whether they lost their job, whether their business went out of business. Again, let me repeat, this pandemic has impacted us all one way or another.
And you know, I've softened a little bit on this.
You
so,
have.
Yeah.
You
so
have.
My hope is that everyone who can, who doesn't have a medical issue, can get the, you know, get the vaccine, will do it.
Sure.
If you have one of those religious exemptions, and there aren't many, but if you have one of those religious exemptions, I hope that they are granted and then something is worked out. If we, and this is the reason I'm softening.
Why?
Because there are professions where we really cannot afford to lose any more people. That would be healthcare, one. I don't know what the firefighter situation is necessarily, but I know with police, it's hard to lose some of those too. And it's we're talking about a small enough population. Why can't they also go through the testing? And you can't work until you are tested. Maybe you have to get tested every day. Maybe you have to just not work with the public. But to lose your whole career over it?
Yeah.
That's hard. I don't wish that on anybody.
Neither do I. I don't want to be that callous of a person. But again, I'm going to remain consistent when I say this COVID is infectious is very serious, one. And two, in the state of Washington, we're nearly at 70%. We're at nearly 70% of people being vaccinated. So now we're talking roughly, we're talking about the 30%. Mm-hmm. And what I'm saying is if you take the 30%, nearly 30% who has not had at least one shot in arm in the state of Washington, what percent of them are healthcare, firefighters, police officers? Mm-hmm. Now, what percent of those are nearing the end of their career? One last point.
And some of them are going to just leave through attrition, and mm-hmm. and that's fine.
Yes.
But when you're talking about someone who is in, you know, mid-career and, you know, for whatever reason, I mean, and I'm not a fan of the you're trampling on my liberties reason. I'm talking about if you truly feel that it is against your religion or you have a medical exemption, which should be enough. That's where I'm saying you shouldn't lose your job over it.
There are some that truly have a medical situation. There are some that truly have a religious. And then there are some that have neither of the two, but are making a lot of noise. And again, my heart goes out to anyone when it comes to their career, or their job. But let's not get it twisted. This pandemic has had us,
yes,
you and I,
yes,
lose friends here in building.
That's true.
So it goes all ways.
Yeah, absolutely. There is no easy answer. And just the... you're absolutely right. And when I start thinking about that, then I get angry all over again. But I just, my hope is that somehow it works out so that we aren't seeing a big number of people losing their jobs. But I would rather you lose your job than other people lose their lives. Let's put it that way. If you are a Seattle renter and you're behind on your monthly payments, you can breathe a little easier, at least for now.
Mayor Jenny Durkin easing those fears, extending the Seattle moratorium through January 15th of 2022. She also extended protections for those behind on utility payments. Meantime, there's still plenty of concern at the state level with the state eviction moratorium due to expire in just a matter of days. Democratic State Representative Nicole Macri.
So I'm very worried about the prospects of a lot of people getting evicted in the months to come.
And that is Cairo Radio's Hannah Scott, who says the governor's office is still considering their options.
Kick the can down the road. And that's exactly what they are continuing to do, Ursula. This is not a good idea, because I have said from the very beginning, no matter what, rent is going to become due. Mm-hmm. Now, I see we're running out of time, so I'm going to simplify it. These actions of making it to where you're saying to people in Seattle, hey, you don't have to pay your rent. Sure. Do I believe that there are some people that are struggling to pay rent? Ain't no doubt about it. So I'm not talking about them. Do I also believe there's another portion of people that are saying, oh, thanks, Jenny Durkin, I'm not going to pay my rent? You know what this says to me? This says that people that are struggling financially and are honest and don't want to play the system, you're going to have a hard time in this world, because there are so many that are out here that are playing the system and getting over. And this is all this is allowing to do. And last but not least, I promise you, we talk on this show and you guys get mad when we talk about the homelessness crisis. You get mad when you look on the side of the road. You get mad when the folks in Woodland Park area, they can't do cross country because of all the encampments. Get ready. 2022, 2023, we're going to see more and more and more homelessness. Why? Because of this problem right here. You're kicking the damn can down the road.
Well said, G. Still ahead, it has been more than 10 months since the presidential election, and there are still people in our state who claim it was stolen. Now they filed a lawsuit in three different counties. We're going to be talking about that, and we'll have a conversation with our Secretary of State, Kim Wyman. You are listening to the G and Ursula Show. It is 9:35. You are listening to the G and Ursula Show. I would say for the vast majority of us, G, the 2020 election is over. But for some, it is not. And now there are three new lawsuits that have been filed in different counties, Snohomish, Whatcom, and Clark. And these lawsuits allege that those county auditors used uncertified voting equipment and manipulated thousands of ballots in a statewide race. And to be clear, there is zero evidence that the claims are true. And these lawsuits, though, are calling for a full forensic audit. And if you've been paying attention, you would see that the same thing happened in audit in Arizona, where they used the same technology, and there was a recent audit and nothing came up, nothing weird came up in that. So the question is this going to be the way that every election will go from here on out? And we've invited Secretary of State Kim Wyman to join us. Good morning, Kim.
Good morning.
I know that you cannot talk specifics about these three pending lawsuits, but just in general, with this idea that months and months after an election, people are still claiming that it was fraudulent or that it's not concluded yet. What is your reaction to that?
Well, it appears to be our new normal. You really go back to the 2018 election where we saw a major candidate make allegations that they didn't lose in Georgia for the governor's race. And then you had, of course, President Trump making those same claims 2 years later. And I think that it has sparked this massive movement towards litigation. We've seen over 600 lawsuits filed in the, kind of the 2020 cycle, and 125 of those were filed just between December and January nationwide. So, I mean, litigation is definitely moving into the strategic part of campaigning in the modern era.
Kim, what kind of damage, what kind of damage can this cause?
Oh, significant damage. I mean, I'm very concerned because it just continuously undermines and questions the validity of our election system. And I know that a swath of the a part of my party is convinced that the election nationally was stolen. They are calling into question our election here in Washington State, clearly with more litigation being just one more example of that. And it concerns me because people start losing faith in our election system. They start losing faith that the people who are elected in that system are legitimate, and it undermines the representative form of government that we have here in this country.
What are you guys I'm not trying to get in your business, but what are you guys talking about? Are you guys talking about whether or not this is going to be the new normal going forward? Are you, this, no matter what the election is, mayor, no matter what, is this going to be the new normal?
It appears so. I think, like I said, I think we started to see it formulate in 2018, and I think both parties kind of learned from each other, and so certainly, it's another tool in a campaign playbook of a way to, call an election into question, don't concede, and then we can just keep calling into question, and then that leader is undermined a little bit in their effectiveness. So, unfortunately, I think it is. But, election officials are always going to focus on the things that we are charged with doing. We create an audit trail for every election. We create a chain of custody for every ballot that each county receives back from a voter. It's a transparent process. Election officials are always looking to the next election, to the next election cycle. Our counties are already starting to prepare for 2022 while they're running an election right now for November. So we have to focus our energies on doing the work.
And I know you're doing so much work, Kim, you and, auditors all across the state and across the country. But how do we restore faith in elections? How can we, is that even possible?
It seems that every 20 years we have a high profile election. We had it in 2000 with Gore v. Bush, certainly Trump, Biden is another one. It takes its toll. I think the good thing that came out of 2000 is we had a federal, bipartisan bill that was passed called the Help America Vote Act that did make some major advances and improvements to our nation's election system. I don't know that we have the ability to do that in the modern era, but I'm always hopeful. And I think the hardest thing right now is that we're seeing election officials across the country who are leaving the profession, that are going to do other work because just the constant drumbeat that you're cheating, you're rigging the election. The very things that prompted them to enter the profession was to protect our democracy, to protect our democratic institutions like the administration of elections, and to have a constant drumbeat that you're cheating or sometimes how rigging it. After a while, you just go, why am I even doing this? And I worry about that exodus of people we're seeing already.
Oh, okay, we don't want that. Okay, I want to point out again, you are a Republican, although you represent the whole state, and I believe that you represent the state beautifully. You have been doing this for a while. Have you seen any evidence of widespread fraud?
No. No, we have not. And we certainly are always on the lookout for it in the aftermath of an election when the ballots are certified and the totals are reported. We go back and we look at things and review things. For example, right now we're comparing our voting history of the 4 million people who voted in this election to other states to see if people voted more than once or if people who had died had a ballot cast in their name. And we're running that data right now, and as soon as we get it, we'll follow that up with prosecuting attorneys. You know, and that, I think that's part of my frustration with some of the things I see online is I'm waiting for the evidence or the claims of the fraud that everybody keeps talking about. And we haven't seen it yet. And no, you know, in 2018, we did this analysis, and of about 3.2 million ballots cast, we had 147, I think, people who either voted more than once or voted on behalf of a dead person. And those were followed up with prosecuting attorneys. And, you know, so is it perfect? No. I don't think when you're dealing with people, it will ever be perfect, but it's also not rampant fraud.
Secretary of State Kim Wyman, we got about 30 seconds, and I was told okay. I was told before this interview that I should not ask you about this, but I'm going to ask it anyways. What happened to the Seahawks?
You know, I can't remember the player's name on the Titans. I think they've got that one
Derrick
guy.
Derrick Henry?
That they wait until everybody gets worn out, and then they bring him on the field, and I don't know what we do.
All right, so they got to get that win. They traveled to Minnesota. They got to get that win, Kim. I know you're a big I know you're a big Seahawks fan, so I had to ask you.
I appreciate that, G.
All right, you take care. Hey,
you too.
Coming up next, and then we need to talk. Ursula, go through your bills during the break. And I need you to go through your bills, and I need you to look at all of those expenses that you need to cut out to save you more money as you enter into 2022. We're going to talk about those next. We're talking about your bills and Chef's bills, not mine. And we'll talk about your bills, too. What is something that you need to cut out of your budget to save you more money that you spend every single month? It's G and Ursula. It is the G and Ursula Show. Coming up at 10 o'clock for three things that you need to know at 10. One of those are the two new regulations that were approved by Seattle City Council that we will talk about, and we really need to discuss that.
And it's not favorable for landlords.
No, it's not at all. And wait, and it's not favorable for people that are trying to do the best that they can and are very honest. And I'll explain how things are going to be really bad for you. But right now, we need to talk. And we need to talk about them bills, ladies and gentlemen. Budgets are tight.
Don't sound so chipper about it. This is going to be uncomfortable.
Cost of living is up. Chef and I, during the break, were talking about groceries. Chef has a real problem, and he doesn't want to go get the simple 2-for-5 bag of cheese. He wants to go get the block of cheese. Grocery store spending is up, Ursula. Now, people are looking for new ways to cut their expenses. I ask you to go through your bills, Ursula, and I ask you at home to go through your bills or in the car. What have you been paying for years and you didn't realize it and you really looked at your account and you're like, yo, I need to cut this Netflix, gym membership, going out to eat. What is something that you want to cut out going into the year 2022? Ursula, let's go.
A couple of things. One is if I were to do an audit of these random things that I am paying for, mm-hmm. I could probably save at least $100 to $200 a year. And these are things like credit cards that I never use, but I thought it would be good because they had some good mileage program attached. And then, you know, right now I just use one credit card. So I'm paying some annual fee for something I've never used.
Don't close your account because it'll ding your credit score.
Yeah.
No, I'm just That is such a scam.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So that's one. I'm paying for extra storage on my phone. Do I really need it? So every time the bill
is full anyways.
I know it's like, how would I just clear out my phone?
Okay.
That would be good.
Okay.
And then I absolutely could cut out eating out by 50%. I'm never going to give that up. I love doing that.
But cut it by 50%.
If I cut it by 50%, I could retire probably a year early.
mine is simple. And Chef, I'll go to you. Mine is very simple. If I just cut out, there's this on Twitter. You guys know what I'm talking about. It's called Fat Kids Deals. Fat Kids Deals. If you follow them on Twitter, they basically give you really good deals on Amazon. So I'm telling you right now, if you're somebody who does not need to do more spending, Do not follow Fat Kids Deal on Twitter because you get amazing deals. Like just the other day, I bought three big things of Dove soap for $8.99. Three big things, right? So I probably do that three or four times a week. I need to cut that out. I need to quit following them. I do them so much that they tweeted at me the other day some Ohio State stuff. Talking about, gee, you like this? What? Okay, what did you guess, Chef?
You're 100% right. It's generally groceries. Like, my wife is, she's building up her business, so we're not making the same amount of income. She's informed me, we are no longer a PCC family, so you need to stop shopping there, and you need to go, like, Safeway, because that's where we're at right now on our budget. But honestly, and I think everyone has this answer, they're just not willing to admit it, it's Amazon. It's that thing that you need that, oh, you know what, I could really use this thing. Click, click, boom, it shows up in 2 days. And if you look at your spending over the course of the year on Amazon, you'll be gobsmacked. You'll be gobsmacked.
I think
no one wants to look at it, though, because it's...
Yeah. No, no.
You don't want to know.
Yeah, I'm not that bad. I'm not that bad yet on Amazon. But I think the other thing that is really telling, if you are that kind of person, like I used to be, I'm not so much right now because I don't want to buy clothes at my current state, but... Like when you go shopping and you see something that's down 70% plus another 30%, I don't know how many pieces of clothing I have that were on that rack that I use one time. If you just cut that out.
Right. There you go. Text line 425 says, last year I saw that I was paying on three Netflix accounts, one through Apple, one through PayPal, and my regular account. I only use one. I think that time to do the audit. That's right. And don't follow Fat Kids Deal on Twitter. You're going to be mad at me. Coming up next, it is time for the top three things that you need to know at 10. And one of those is I'm going to explain to you why the homelessness problem will escalate in 2022 and 2023. Ride with me now. It's the G and Ursa Show.